was she? Did she want to come in, or?
I texted her, but she hasn't read it, so.
Oh, okay.
If she walks in, that, you know, she will. She is a talker. She will. I'm sure she'll chat up them just fine.
That's kind of what we do here. So that's all, you know. We can give her a tour as well. So
she was doing the mom thing and telling me on the way, like, you know, oh, you know, there's a couple weeks back in the 90s where I actually worked with a radio station. Like, that's neat.
Oh, for sure, get her in here then. You know, well, you know.
She's like, yeah, she's always been super personable. She was good friends, or not good friends, but I know she was, you know, at least Facebook friends or something with, like, what are they called? Some of the dudes at 106.3 at one point. I know she's got, like, Cat from 95.7 on Facebook or something.
Oh, cool, cool. So she's, like, very, like, kind of, like, in...
She's always been, like, a fan of, like, the music scene, so... Mm-hmm. And she's, like I said, she's one that, like, becomes friends with people and talks to them and stuff, so it's, like... She helped at my, like, elementary school fairs, like, getting the stage set up for, like, bands to come.
Okay.
That sort of thing. She...
Very much on, like, the technical side, or, like...
she herself is not a technical person. She was telling me that she got, she lost access to her Facebook account for, like, a week and a half. But she is very much on the social side of, like... getting in, like, talking to people and stuff. She likes going to, like, was it Babylon or something, like, local, like, place, going to concerts and being friends with, like, the local music scene and stuff.
Oh, nice. Yeah, that's definitely, it's funny, it's like, here, I wouldn't necessarily call, like, consider myself, like, the most social person, but, like, it definitely helps. This place will definitely, like, bring it out of you, right? Like, cause especially... Like, we're a radio station, but being a volunteer organization is so much, you know, just friendly-facing and, you know, like, talking to people and being like, hey, how's your week? And stuff like that, so.
Yeah, that's what I was telling her. I was like, you know, I'm not nervous about this or anything, even though I've never, you know, done interviews or anything, mm-hmm. because I know that I can talk and do that fine. But also, I could tell, like, you know, You know, Professor Crawford was already saying, like, oh, you know, Dell's so sweet. But also, you know, even from, like, the emails, you know, I was thinking it's hard enough to sound casual. Like, you know, it's hard. Everybody sounds, like, very formal during an email.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Like, if you manage to seem, like, approachable even through an email, I feel like that's a good sign.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah. It's so easy to just kind of, you know, be...
It's... Emails are, like... I don't think anybody really likes them.
No. It's funny, because when you were, like... When you posed the idea, too, I was like, oh, man, I can do this, you know? The in both feeding off, you know, each other's energies is a lot better than, like, let me spend, you know, 45 minutes, like, crafting the right, you know?
Yeah, because you have to... I always come down to, like, you have to match the specific energy of whoever emailed you first. So, like, if they're using exclamation points, even if I wouldn't,
exactly.
I still, like, send, like, you know, it's great to talk to you.
Right. Oh, man, that's so funny. Yeah, that's my default as well. I think I've it's funny you say that, because now my default is just to, like, be exclamation happy, like, especially if I'm starting the conversation. But, yeah, matching that energy is, like, yeah, that's exactly it. Which is just it's you know, it's easier to do in person. So, here, if, I don't know if all this is being recorded right now, but here, if we want to, like, just kind of adjust, we generally say, like, about a hand turkey away from the microphone in any direction. So, like, I don't know, kind of have this here. So,
yeah, that seems fine. I've got. Excuse me, when I get that out of the way.
No, go for it. Yeah. Oh, tell Kelly, by the way, it's like, if she ever wants to come back and volunteer, the door is always open. Mm-hmm. So I know she's probably very busy, but...
Yeah, the class with her is entirely online.
Oh, okay.
So it's mostly, like, she records a video and then we do, like, work. And so I've only, like, actually spoken to her once over Zoom.
Oh, okay.
But, like, you know... You get a good impression of what she's like through the videos and stuff.
She's also one of those people in terms of matching energy. You know, she's so, I don't know, she's, she's so up and, like, you know, she kind of lifts. She's one of those people, like, when you're talking to her, all of a sudden now I'm excited, you know, just about whatever we're talking about. So, yeah.
Yeah, it works well. It's one of those things where, like, you sort of get you have an idea in your head of, like, what is the kind of person who super cares about, like, volunteering? Like, how are they like?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like that.
And it's like, yeah, exactly. It's kind of like, you know, that Leslie Knope kind of, like, you know,
definitely
energy.
Nope.
Like, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so I guess we'll say, like, you know, here's the official start of the interview.
Sure.
I guess, like, I'm Joey Girardo, and I'm, you know, interviewing Del Agnew, the... What is your official...
Assistant Program Director, yeah.
The Assistant Program Director at WRBH, the radio station for the blind. And I'm going to ask a few questions, and we'll see where it goes.
Cool.
So, I you know, looking into this place, I'd heard the story on the website, but, you know, just for the having it on record, how was the station founded, if you know?
Oh, man. Gosh, if you read the website, you might have more knowledge than I do. I know it was Dr. McClellan? Is that the name? Or he a blind mathematician who started the station? Shoot, I am the wrong person to answer this question. Other departing executive director Natalia comes down, she'd probably be best for this. But yeah, it started, I think, you know, late 70s. So there wasn't a lot. This sort of model wasn't really around in New Orleans as a reading radio service. So I'm not exactly sure what the early beginnings were, but I know starting, I think, in 82, because it's been about 40 years that we've been on this station number, 88.3 FM, which is also very rare. You know, there's a lot of reading radio services for... Oh, is this your mom?
Oh, that's not me, no.
Oh, that's... Who's this? Oh, that's Charlotte. Oh, hey, that's what's going on. Terrible vision, too, so
no,
it's...
No, my mom's got, like... You know, blue hair right now.
Oh, okay. So
she likes experimenting with that sort of thing.
Oh, hell yeah! New Orleans is the place then.
Oh yeah, born and raised. Definitely.
Oh, nice. But yeah, no, it's the most. I mean, there's reading radio services other around the world and with sister stations. You know, around the country, there's one in Maine, one in Kentucky that we have some contact with, but it's very rare. I think we're the only one, like, 24/7 service on the FM dial. Some are just, you know, sections on AM. It generally makes more sense for AM or on sideband radio. But yeah, it's pretty unique in that it being on the FM dial and being a full service. So that's my understanding of the history, kind of
yeah.
of the station.
Because that's a great segue into what I had next. Because you know. Again, like the website, you know, it's a frequent thing, you know, mentioned that it's one of, if not the only, full-time FM radio rating services in the United States. Mm. And, you know, from what I could tell, it's just as rare, if not rarer, outside of the U.S.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, why do you think that's the case? Maybe should there be an effort to increase, like, the stations that do this?
You know, that's... It's interesting now, too, I guess, with the proliferation of podcasts and, you know, there's a lot more blind accessible apps and stuff for your friends. So whether, yeah, I would definitely be in favor for it. Like, I think it is a... It's a cool service, too, like, as us being a nonprofit because, like, you know, we're not having to worry about, you know, ad sales or stuff like that, or like that would affect our programming. We can just, you know, our programming is dictated just by a variety of things. You know, we're open to suggestions, but also, you know, what's coming out, you know, best-selling fiction and nonfiction, stuff like that. But like, it's kind of up to our discretion and, you know, the, suggestions we get, you know, what to air out. So I would definitely, it would be really cool to see more services like this, or at least more segments on stations like this, where it's like, okay, we're reading, you know, this is the book hour, stuff like that. Because I think it's a very, I don't know, especially the feedback we get from people who listen, it's very, it's comforting not only to hear to hear a book being read, but also the voice being that's reading to you. We get a lot of feedback, you know, about people, you know, developing attachments to certain readers, and, you know, our fans sort of knows, like, oh, you know, Charlotte just walked by, she's like, ah, oh, Charlotte Trevieso, that's a favorite reader of mine, or, you know, Jillian Richmond or Jeff Warden or Cameron Gamble or Constance McInerney, who that's a very famous local legend. It was a volunteer that we had here for a number of years. So yeah, okay, so a long answer to say, yeah, it would be great to see this sort of service elsewhere. Yeah.
Yeah. And then sort of on top of that, you know, why, I mean, obviously it is the case that the doctor was here, so mm-hmm. we did it here, but why is New Orleans the place? Why is it like the only one to have this? Is there, you think there's like a connection between the city and the mission, or?
You know, that's a good question. I've wondered that in the past. One thing I would say about that is, you know, around here, like, community is a very important thing, right? It's like it's a fairly big city, but it's definitely that, you know, a small town. You know, you can't go run to someone you went to high school with, you know, almost never walk a life. I would say that New Orleans is emphasis on community kind of plays into why it makes sense for it to happen here, because we do have our mission, obviously, but also with that, it is very much a community radio station. So, like, having a good relationship with your listeners and the people who volunteer is very important. I think, yeah, a place like New Orleans is definitely sort of feeds into that. Yeah, so that's what I would say. Yeah, I'm interested to see what Natalie would possibly say. I'm going to get her down here after this to see what her thoughts on that would be.
Yeah, that'd be great. And then, like, you know, how do you think expanding online has kind of changed the way this works? How, like, you know, is the scope broadened or anything? Or,
oh, yeah.
Like, it's still New Orleans, but, like, do you feel like a responsibility to serve, like, that broader audience?
The broader audience? Obviously, we do have some program that's, like, New Orleans specific, but, yeah, I would say we kind of treat it as, you know, what's a good way to answer this? I would say yeah, like our responsibility is broader. Is yeah, we do treat it much more broadly. It's certainly helped in terms of, you know, people will oftentimes, what happens is, like, people when they visit New Orleans, you know, they never rent a car. You're searching through radio stations, and, like, we'll have a number of people find us that way. They're like, oh, I wish I could tune in. You know, I live in, you know, Kansas or something like that. But so it's definitely helpful in that way. It's like, oh, well, we have, you know, tune in online. You know, you can pull it up anywhere. And so it's definitely, and even though there are some, like, specific local specific things, like, we like the local newspaper show, it's pretty evergreen and pretty, you know, not just a New Orleans geared community. So yeah, I would say it has expanded our listenership, and also, yeah, our responsibility to make sure that people outside of New Orleans can tune in a way that's inviting and not, you know, doesn't feel like, oh, this is a New Orleans thing, you know? So yeah.
And then, I guess this is sort of like the close, like, a call to action sort of question, but, like,
sure.
You know, what can be done by, you know, whether it's the government or the station's current workforce or just even the people who find the station or, you know, this interview specifically, like, what can they do to help make WRBH the best it can be?
First and foremost, I would say tune in, you know. You know, we're always, not always, we're frequently looking for volunteers. So if you're ever interested in reading, you know, just give us a call, shoot us an email. We go through times where we're full up, so we're closed to volunteers. We go through times where we need more volunteers. Right now, we're kind of in a period where we're trying to take on a few more. Also, as a side note, it's been trickier the last 2 years with COVID and everything. We just opened back up in July of 2021. We were remote for a year and a half, so which had its challenges. But yeah, the best call to action, you know, just get involved. Follow us on Facebook. Follow us on Instagram. You know, like, see what's happening with the station. Definitely tune in. And yeah, if you're in a position where you can help out, just, you know, give us a call, and, you know, we'll get you in here for an audition. And, you know, that's another cool thing about being a volunteer radio station. I don't know, get people all from all walks of life, and you can kind of, it's, yeah, going back to that community thing, it's cool to be able to develop relationships with people, not unlike, you know, your professor, who's, you know, it's been a little while since she's read here, but, you know, that's now just a friendship that we've, you know, a cherished friendship that we've able to, you know, been able to cultivate. So it's, yeah, it's, the relationship side is also good. So, yeah, so again, roundabout way to answer your question, I would say the best way to get involved is, you know, just, you know, give us a call.
All right. That's all I had. So, sure. You know, thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely. Would you be interested in, I don't know, maybe shooting some of those questions over to Tim or Natalia, someone who could, I feel like didn't give you the most information on the history of the station. They might be able to give you a little bit more depth there.
Yeah, sure. I think, you know, we can get some other people and
cool.
Ask the same and, yeah, hopefully.
And kind of, yeah, and you might be able to, yeah, mix and match and,
yeah.
Cool. Well, yeah, let's go see who's available.
We'll talk with Del. Just kind of went through some of the questions that I had, but he suggested that I also talk to you guys for some extra information. So, sorry, let me just, I guess, you know, start over again.
Yeah,
and I'll say, like, you know.
Yeah, we just, like, showed up. We're like, here we are.
Yeah, hi. Like,
yeah, hi, this is Joey again. I'm now talking to
Natalia Gonzalez.
And
Tim Vogel.
And you guys are the...
We're the executive team.
Correct.
I'm the executive director.
I'm the associate executive director.
So, yeah, we're talking with the big dogs now, I guess.
Yes.
And, I'm just going to go through some of the questions again and see, you know, if the story matches.
No. Ooh, let's hope so.
Question number one.
But, yeah, so I was looking through the website before coming here, and, you know, I saw the story, but I also wanted to, you know, get it from you guys, you know, have it on record. So what do you guys know about how the station was founded?
What I know is that in the 70s, a blind mathematics professor at Loyola, back then there wasn't information readily available, and all the information that was available for blind people was through Braille. And Braille books and magazines take weeks, if not months, to produce. So he had the idea of starting a radio station where everyday words would be written for the blind. The current information would be made available for the blind. And they started out by just reading the newspaper, and then it slowly evolved into a 24/7 radio station that read for the blind. Current information. That's my understanding of how it started. And we initially began the trip with Lighthouse. It was a conjoint effort. And then WRBH got enough money to buy this building. And we've been here since 92, 1992,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's also, again, like said that, you know, it's one of the, if not the only, full-time FM radio reading service in the United States.
Yes.
And from what I can tell, they're just as rare, maybe even rarer outside of the U.S.?
Yeah, there's one in New Zealand, I believe, and one in Australia. And we've actually been in contact with the folks in Australia, and we were thinking it would be great if we had the budget to go do a field trip over there. But nah, it's a nonprofit.
Yeah, that does sound pretty cool, but some things are a little tougher, especially now. But yeah, I was thinking, like, why do you guys think these are so rare? Like, should there be an effort to increase the number of stations that are doing this, or?
You want me to answer this right now? Or you got an answer?
I mean, I can come up with an answer. You know, I mean, I think there's a couple reasons. I mean, you know, radio in general, I think, is a thing that's, you know, is something of a dinosaur these days. I mean, a lot of people can access their music and talk radio other digital instant sort of ways. So, you know, things with broadcast signals, they are disappearing. We're a little different. I mean, we're a service. Like, we don't compete for ratings. We don't play music. We're here to provide something for people. I think we're often confused with the other kind of radio stations. So that might be part of the reason why there aren't more FM stations like us. I mean, it's hard to get a full-blown for-profit FM station up and running these days, much less one that relies on grants and donations and provides a service. You know, it's not exactly something that people are chasing after that much. I think that's part of the answer.
I think that's critical. I think the funding is the biggest issue. Writing grants is generally a process, and the grantors, if you will, always want new sexy projects or programs. And by virtue of what we do, as Tim said, we're providing a service. Our programming has to maintain, it's static. It's static programming. You know, we're not going to invent a project or a program just to get funding. We need operational funds, and those are the hardest funds to come by when you're depending on grants. So I think that's why there was one in Memphis. When I started here 20 years ago, there was still a viable FM reading radio station in Memphis. But I believe 5 years, so 15 years ago, it had to close its doors because of lack of funding. And funding, I mean, it's difficult. And as Tim said, now our mission to provide current information, it's not as important as it was 40 years ago. Because now information is, as you know, because you're of that generation, information is available in a second. And it's accessible. So it's hard. And I'm very proud of the fact that we've been able to stay alive for this long.
Yeah. I mean, we do so differently. I mean, we do a lot of curation, you know. I mean, there's, you know, while it's true you might be able to fire up, an app and hear it. Digital, whatever, a voiceover of whatever article you're looking for. I mean, that presumes you know right where to go for what you're looking for. You have your subscriptions all set up. You have your phones all set up, all that kind of, you know what I mean? Like, we're sort of low barrier, and we understand our community. I mean, we see ourselves as part of the community. So that's kind of who we're, not that we're bound by that. I mean, we do stream online, but we're a Gulf South radio station. We're a New Orleans radio station. We're, you know, we have good relationships with the people here in our immediate vicinity and in this area. And the news and material, we sort of, you know, if a hurricane blows through town, like, we're going to be covering that because it's important to the people in this area. We're not going to, you know, gloss over. Like, that's the kind of thing that you can, again, you can fire up an app and go to the right website and stream the right thing. But we sort of do that here for those people. You know what I mean? We really want to make that as low barrier and as easy as possible. So that is something where we differentiate ourselves, but yeah, you know, funding, she's right. You know, it's not, we don't build brightly colored playgrounds or rehabilitate, you know, homes or things that you can sort of walk by and be, oh, that's so beautiful. That's not, I mean, we're a service. We make radio waves. They're sort of out there. So finding funding for that is, you know,
challenging.
Yeah, it's challenging. It's hard to get people to pay for something they can't see. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I do like the emphasis you guys are placing, though, on, you know, New Orleans. And it does sort of feel like that when you talk about how it is a struggle to stay afloat, but somehow this place has for so long. That, to me, feels... every city loves to say that, like, they're, like, the most tenacious. They withstand everything.
But we are.
But, yeah, it does. It feels like... This station is like, you know, sort of a microcosm of that, like the little guy who keeps going.
Exactly. And it's funny because one of my sisters lives in Texas, and she, every time she listens, and she does listen through the stream, she's like, oh, I can smell New Orleans when I hear some of your people reading, because we don't discriminate. If you have a lovely Ninth Ward accent, bring it on, or a Southern accent. You know, it's part of the charm of how we present our materials, you know? It's and you do get a sense of, man, that is so naturally Nolans, you know?
We get this feedback all the time. You know, people... Sometimes we'll reach out, how can we improve our programming? What would you like to hear? What would you like to change? And a lot of times our listeners say, oh, well, we like what you do. What we like is that you're another voice in the room. You're a person there with us. And not to be disparaging against, like, digital reading applications or anything like that, but yeah, there is a little bit of an accent. A person who knows how to pronounce or grew up here can read the news a certain way that it actually sounds like somebody you know in the room with you, reading to you, keeping you company. Like, there's a humanity about that, you know, I mean, again, I don't want to beat up anybody's apps, but a digitally produced recording just, I
doesn't have
hard to achieve. It's hard to achieve that. Yeah.
They don't know what the neutral ground is.
They never will. Or the Bonnie Carey spillway.
Right. Yeah,
actually, I'm not too far from that. I grew up in Destrehan, so.
Oh, okay. So, yeah. So you know what we're talking about.
Yeah. It's much more, it's just authentic and real. And for those listening, I mean, in that situation, it's just, it's better for them. They like it there. And, you know, we're a part of the community the same way they are. And we all talk. It's not a, you know, we're not selling ads.
There's
a
warmth to it that you're not going to find with some practiced actor reading a book, you know. I actually like it when there's a little bit of a mistake, because it makes it even that much more human.
Yeah, it reminds you it's live, for sure.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But then all of that, I guess, my question is sort of, you know, why do you think New Orleans is one of these places that has this, like, a full-time radio station? Like, do you think there is an innate connection between the city and the mission, so to speak?
Yes. 100% yes. I think we thrive here, and I'm going to say that we're thriving right now, because we are, because New Orleans has embraced what we do as this little community radio station. You know, like you said, like the little engine that could. You know, we have been through it all. We have. I've seen it all here, and we keep on going, and we keep on going, and it's also because we're 100%, except for the staff, volunteer-driven. And it's a very wonderful place to volunteer, because the only skill you need is to be able to read. You know, you don't have to pick up a hammer. You know, you don't have to like cats and dogs. But but you do, you know, you sit in, and it's a lovely meditative kind of a process to sit in this booth and read. And our volunteers have been the mainstay, the backbone, the life's blood of this place. And it's like the most special place I've ever had the privilege of working at, because it's so community driven. And I do believe that in the spirit of what makes New Orleans, New Orleans, and I hate the word resilient, but we are resilient, and it shows in everything that we do.
A couple years ago, when the pandemic took hold here, at least early on, I noticed how readily people took to, like, wearing masks or staying home. And it dawned on me right then that folks in the city understand better, I think, what it means to help each other, like doing things for other people. They had just been through hurricanes, you know, Katrina just a couple years ago, and had to look out for each other. And it's been going on forever here. So I think, you know, a city that puts forth a service like yeah, I think people here are very comfortable with the idea of helping folks that help other folks, you know? I think that's just what goes on in this city.
I agree. Can I tell you a quick little story?
Sure.
When I was here when Katrina struck, and we were all scattered everywhere. Our volunteers were scattered. You know, New Orleans had never experienced anything like that. And my husband and I snuck back into the city. And we came here. First, we went to our house, and then I really wanted to come here and see what was going on. And why I didn't take a picture, I don't know, but that glass door was papered with notes from volunteers. Where are you? How can we help? Is everybody okay? And for me, that was the sign I needed. I was ready to just pack it in and say, I don't want to do this. This is bigger than me. But that was the motivating factor of us figuring out how to make WRBH come back to life. And we just haven't looked back. And I'm going to brag on these people here in this room because they're the ones who got us through the pandemic without missing a beat, which is pretty amazing.
It really is. And I like kind of you said you thought at one time that it was bigger than you. And maybe it is. But I think, again, that sort of speaks to sort of maybe New Orleans, maybe just people in general, but like, things can be bigger than you, but you rise up and you become bigger. You become as big as the thing that was bigger, and you make it a thing that you can handle.
That's right. That's right. Just it's called putting one foot in front of the other.
Yeah. And then, yeah, I think it's been mentioned when we were talking already. Like, you guys have expanded online to some extent, you know. How do you think that's broadened the scope? And at this point, I feel like we've kind of gone over this, but I'll still ask, you know, do you guys feel it is still distinctly New Orleans, or do you feel that responsibility to serve a new, broader audience?
That's an interesting question. I do think we still orient ourselves towards New Orleans. Not that I shine, you know, or we gravitate away from anything like that. But no, we're in the community. We're here. We're part of, you know, these people. These people are the ones you hear on the radio station. I don't know.
We
stream, you know.
I like books. You know, I like books, and I like to read a lot. It's one of the things I love to do. I like languages. I mean, now, so we have expanded to accommodate the growing populations in New Orleans. You know, like we have Spanish speaking programs. We used to have a Vietnamese program, but that kind of met its demise during the pandemic.
It's a big schedule.
I
say we're a community radio station, but we do.
It's important to me that we stay ahead of the trends of bestsellers. Mm-hmm. And I mean the quality bestsellers. Yeah. You know, if I was going to go to a bookstore, I'd go to the indie section because that's the kind of stuff I like to read. But it's also important that we read the, what's the big book now? Oh, I'm reading it right now. Cloud Cuckoo Land by Anthony Doerr, who wrote All the Light We Cannot See. Does that mean anything to you?
the Cloud Cuckoo part does?
Yeah, it's an interesting book. It's about reading.
Yeah. We give a lot of, like, national publications, too. I mean, we certainly read out of the Wall Street Journal.
I mean,
we do read out of the New York Times. I guess that's another city, the Washington Post, you know. So yeah. We're not so pigeonholed.
The national news is mm-hmm. important, you know. But the thing we don't do is editorialize or speak our own, our personal views are kept squashed. It's hard sometimes to do that when you're reading, if you're really disagreeing with an article. But we suggest that you just read and not sneer while you're reading or something like that.
Yeah, and I think that's, I mean, not to get into sort of that whole thing, but that is tougher and therefore more admirable, I think, lately.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
You have to actively do it.
You really do. It's a conscious effort.
It's a conscious thing. You have to actively sort of like make sure like your own preferences aren't filtering through somewhere, you know?
Yeah, because it's not just holding your nose. You can't even make it sound like you're holding your
nose. Exactly. No.
Yeah, it has to be completely the opposite. Like, everything. Just, come on, let's bring it all in.
Yeah. And I guess that is sort of New Orleans in its own way, too, trying to accommodate so many different walks of life.
Fair.
And then this, like I was telling Del, this is sort of, I guess, the call to action sort of question where it's like, you know, what can be done by the government, the station's current workforce, you know, by listeners or just the people who find this interview specifically, like, what can they do to help make WRBH the best it can be?
Donate.
Yeah, donation.
Donate money. Donation.
It's true. It's true. Like, operating budgets are so hard to find. I mean,
And listen. And tune in and listen. Give us a chance because you're going to like what you hear.
Yeah. We like constructive feedback, too. You know, I mean, we're not beyond error.
No, we're not.
We're not, you know, so suggestions or programming, we like that stuff, too. But, you know, really, I mean, yeah, as we mentioned, it's tough running a nonprofit. It's tough being a radio station providing a service like this. So, like, just keeping the lights on, keeping the radio station broadcasting, man. That's what's important. That's what we need.
Yeah. Thank you both so much.
Oh,
that's
our pleasure.
All I had, but I think we've got plenty.
So.
Yeah. Cool. Again, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Julie.
Thank you. We ought to go on the road.
Yeah, right. I know. 50 states.
That's right. Oh, this is fun. I can't wait to read it.
Yeah, we'll see. I'm not sure when it's supposed to
after you
become. Thank you. I'm not sure when it's supposed to become a
thing.
A full thing.